are delighted that you could join us today, and we hope you'll join us each and every week on our new prepareforchange.net radio show at bbsradio.com every Sunday from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., where we will be featuring new speakers from the global community, and we hope you can join us. Please remember that Prepare for Change is a volunteer group and we survive by donations only. So look deep within, and if you feel guided, we encourage you to go to the prepareforchange.net website and donate an amount you can afford. That way you keep going the divine prepareforchange.net global movement. We thank you for your generosity and much needed show of love and kindness. Greetings everyone. This is the show for Sunday, March 8th, 2015. I'm Judy, co-chair of the media group. And I'm here with my beautiful co-host, Ray Issa, who is the co-chair of the Renaissance group.
Hello, everyone, and hello, Judy and Dog. It's great to be together again.
Well, last week we had a beautiful conversation with Dave Norwoods and Dove, who comprised the band Tribal Tree, and we had them in the studio, and that was fascinating when Dave was talking about his travels.
Yes, Dave was talking about his adventure in South America. I understand that Dove had some amazing adventure in South America as well, huh?
Yes, it's good to be here with everybody. South America, over 23 years ago, we were getting ready to go to the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro. And myself and Judy as well was there for 2 weeks celebrating the spirit of Rio.
So what happened was that all the global leaders of the world got together for their conference, and it was June 1992. And so at the same time, 30,000 citizen activists from around the world decided to converge on Rio and have a conference called the Global Forum adjacent to the World Leaders Forum, which I thought was a wonderful idea because people were feeling like their ideas about protecting the Earth and visions for the future of the Earth were not being taken into account, and they wanted to have a presence there.
Yes, it was a very important gathering of many of the world leaders, presidents and prime ministers and government agencies attended, but like we said, there were 30,000 citizen activists that came as non-governmental organizations, and we created something called the Global Forum right in Botafogo Beach Park, and there were set up many booths and...
Well, there was the Global Heart Tent.
The Global Heart Tent where there's a big tree, looked like a globe, and people sent their wishes for the world, and there was a lot of native people there from the tribes, from the rainforest, and the spirit of the carnival there in Rio was kind of active. It was just in fact, they gave that area to the citizens as a separate state, almost a country of the world, I think they called it.
Is that right?
So it was for those 2 weeks, it was a special place that we were part of, and we performed, and we were able to meet a lot of really fascinating people.
I remember somebody had told us that they were rounding up the street children because they didn't want to be embarrassed for all these people coming from all over the world, so they thought, let's just get rid of them. And we heard some terrible stories that some of them were being killed for an underground organ harvesting scheme. Anyway, everybody got together and went out and brought these children. How many were there, Dev? Were there about 300 children, I believe?
Yeah, there was one afternoon where at this Global Heart Tent, because there were different tents that people had their base at, and we would perform and speak at that place. And these children were brought, and they were given a whole afternoon of hospitality and food and singing and dancing, and so we experienced that.
It was really, truly beautiful.
Sounds like an amazing experience.
It really was. They didn't speak English, but it didn't matter because they would dance with us, and their faces lit up, and they just felt loved.
We took two of them on a little tour throughout the village, and I remember them playing in this giant, colorful dragon that was set up for children, and their faces were so pure, and that was part of it. But ultimately, we were there to make a statement about the environment, about the Earth, about the future that we all share.
Right. And Dev, you had an experience with the Wisdom Keepers. I know that Hannah Strong, set up a boat excursion. Is that?
Yes.
Remember that?
We were invited to attend. The Wisdom Keepers are the native indigenous people that gathered to together create a energy and a voice for the for the native people. And so we joined their excursion and took a bus far from the Rio to a port, and then on a boat, and we went on a journey through these islands to an island where there were food, and there was parrots there, and we just played music and talked to all these people. And then after we got back that night, there was a photographer named Courtney Milne, and he did a slideshow, and it was inspiring there at this this plantation what we stayed at. And then we went out, and there was a fire that was going on, like a campfire, and Jimmy Cliff was there, and we were singing some music with him and Jim Barinholtz, and we're talking about, you know, how the rainforest is being cut, there's fires going on, and it was very poignant and really amazing to be there. And then the next morning, I was needed to get back to perform at the Global Forum, and I got a ride to someplace near on the outskirts of Rio, and I didn't know where I was or how I was going to get there in time. And I looked up, and there was a bus, and in the bus were the school children that I was supposed to be performing with.
Oh, that's beautiful.
They came and picked me up. They said, "Do you want a ride?" I said, "I certainly do." And I hopped in. We made it in time.
Didn't you get to rehearse on the bus?
And we got to go over the song on the bus, and we got there and performed in time.
That's beautiful.
One of the things I remember the most was the most magnificent breakfast buffets at the Hotel Gloria, where everybody was staying. And so you never knew who you were going to meet down at the breakfast, and the food was yummy. It was these bananas, so, so good. I remember one morning I wasn't hungry, so I didn't go down, and Dove came racing back to get me, and I said, what is it? He said, there's somebody downstairs you definitely need to meet at breakfast. Right, Dove?
That's right. It was Helen Caldicott, who's from Judy's land of Australia, and she was there with her, I guess,
secretary,
and they were alone, and there was no one else there. And I thought, if this is the perfect time for her to have that conversation, so I grabbed her to come down. But Helen was pretty much pointing the finger at me because I was from America, and America was the place that was really doing the most damage and problem to the environment.
Well, she actually said to you, Dove, what is it that you're doing to correct this, didn't she?
Yeah, she put the burden on me, and I said, well, I'm here, I'm performing, I'm painting murals, I'm singing songs, but I'll do more.
I have seen some of your beautiful murals on Sherman Way, and I understand you have painted in 6 different schools. So how important is it, Dove, for young people to get involved in Earth stewardship?
I think it's very important. I think it's something that if you can learn as a child, you can stay with you your whole life. And it not only is it something you give, but it's something you get back, having a relationship with the Earth, having a feeling of responsibility and a stewardship. That word stewardship of being caring for the environment, caring for your local your home, your neighborhood, your parks, and then globally as well. That was the saying we had, was act locally but think globally, because the Earth is one. As you you can affect the world through wherever you are. So I was able to paint a mural out there in Rio, and I came back and painted a giant mural here that said Earth Day every day, and it's still there after all this time, reminding people that it is Earth Day every day, and we can. There's many things we can do to make it even better every day.
They're beautiful murals, and they're beautiful colors, inspiring, uplifting. Keep painting them.
Thank you.
And yes.
And going to the schools has been a really great experience, giving each of the kids a chance to put their own vision into a circle or a bubble, and then I tie it all together into a mural that incorporates all the children's visions too.
It's the people like you, adult people, that set a great example for young people to follow. And we need to set a great example of how to care for Mother Earth, how to save the planet for future generations. Isn't that so?
Well, you know, it's, and as well, it's amazing how children know what to do themselves if they're given the opportunity to paint or draw. We had a contest with all the kids in the valley. We ended up with maybe 400 drawings from the children, and each of them was special in their own way. And then we did a tile where the children painted their visions, and now it's in a park, all the tiles.
Oh, that's beautiful. Hmm.
So getting back to the people that you collaborated with at Rio at the Global Forum, tell me about Wangari Maathai, who was across the hallway.
That's right. Wangari Maathai is an activist from Africa, and she came to the Global Forum and had some special events. She led a walk from the Global Heart tent and through the Tree of Life, and we were all following her with candles and chanting, "This little light of mine, I'm going to see it shine.
I'm going to let it shine."
And at night, through this magical evening in Rio, while music's going on and plays and skits and food, and she ended up winning a Nobel Peace Prize.
Wow.
She helped plant trees in Africa. She raised the attention and awareness of the need for protecting their native environment.
And
beautiful, taking our responsibility.
Yeah. You never knew who you were going to meet in the elevator as you were going up to your room. One day, who did we meet in the elevator?
Was it Jane Fonda?
Jane Fonda and Ted Turner.
Oh.
And then, of course, the most beautiful time was when we wanted to play some music down in the foyer, right?
Well, we were in the lobby there at the Hotel Gloria, and people from different nations would sit down and relax and talk, and then, sure enough, showed up was the ambassador from the United Nations, which is John Denver. So we got a chance to hang out with him, and he was like, people were saying, "Well, play some music." He said, "Well, I don't have my guitar with me here." And I said, "Well, I can go grab my guitar for you."
So Doug went up and he got his violin and his guitar and brought them back, and they played, they jammed together. Other people joined in too.
And we had people clapping and singing. He sang a song called "Whisper of the Wind" in his Foxfire Suite, which is what you're listening to is the actual jam with John playing guitar and singing, and I was playing violin, and everybody was having a good time.
You are every field of laughter, you are every cry of pain.
was a very good note.
And then that night he had to do a duet with Olivia Newton-John, and he didn't trust anybody with his guitar, so he asked me if Dove would look after it for him. So Dove, he trusted, right?
Yeah, he trusted. I think my guitar ended up in his room overnight.
It did, yes, it did.
Judy, what is this book that you have here? The Earth Summit, A Planetary Reckoning by Adam Rogers?
Adam was a friend of ours. He lived in Agoura Hills, and he was at the Earth Summit and documented in a magnificent way everything that went on there.
Yeah, it's probably the only book on that event, and with his pictures and his writing. He's a journalist. He's now working with the United Nations.
Oh, and there's a picture of John Denver right there. Yeah.
And so he wrote about a special night that closed the event.
Well, he wrote about the whole experience, but that was the part that I was sharing with Raisa, and she thought it'd be nice if we shared it with everybody.
Let's do that.
Okay, sure.
Go ahead.
So to mark the end of the summit, the NGOs, the press, and thousands of Brazilians gathered at Flamingo Park to celebrate and make the best of what did or did not happen. As the sun fell behind the mountains of Rio de Janeiro, a full moon ascended over the shimmering waters of the Atlantic, sending a soothing glow over the faces of a people uncertain of a future, but ready to appreciate the moment. Those faces were of every nation, of every tongue, with an understanding that transcends the spoken word. Each looked at the other with confidence that a threshold had been crossed during the previous 12 days.
To help celebrate this realization, a concert was organized for the last night, beginning shortly after nightfall, with a carefree, joyous abandonment that is endemic in Brazil. Thousands of bodies packed tightly in front of the stage, swaying to the rhythm of popular South American and international musicians. The speakers that addressed the crowd in between sets were mostly Brazilian, but their message was universal. They spoke of the need for environmental preservation and of the importance of keeping the spirit of Rio alive so that future generations could sing and dance as they were. More than 30 different acts appeared on stage, one after the other, sharing this common message.
Shortly before midnight, the full moon climbed high into the sky, its pale light illuminating the faces of the young and the old. As the evening's fervor intensified, the moon added to the spectacle by rendering a total eclipse, competing with the artists on stage for the crowd's attention. In the newfound darkness that blanketed the city, all humanity, standing shoulder to shoulder in the park, joined as one. Overhead, the Southern Cross kept watch on a world that reflected the glittering light of a star-filled sky. It was as if all of nature knew why the people of the planet had convened on Rio. For a moment that lasted into eternity, there was hope.
The concert continued until 3 a.m. with a closing performance by Planet Players of Los Angeles, who sang Earth Day every day to project the message that the Earth Summit was not over, not nearly over, and that it wouldn't be over until all the reasons that led to the summit were addressed and solved.
And I'll never forget that night. That was the most beautiful night. Dove is remembering right now. He's kind of got tears in his eyes. Wasn't it magnificent? All those people, they came together with a spirit of love in their hearts. And we knew that the earth would totally regenerate itself. We knew that if we all got together, there was no way it wouldn't happen.
There was a group there called One World Now, and they sponsored different events to inspire people towards global unity, and my friend Fantuzzi, who's a great performer, and I sat down and we wrote a song called One World Now, and that was a lot of fun, and he performed that night at the full moon concert, and
I think he performed right before us.
Right, and he used my guitar on the stage.
Why should we live separated? And the Earth Parliament, just a powerful image, was when Paul Wellstone strode onto the stage and he was carrying a beautiful little brown suitcase and he held it up high in the air and he said, I'm bringing with me a suitcase of messages from all of the children of Minnesota for the kind of world that they want to see.
That's right. It was very inspiring to see him up there and hold that suitcase. And he brought it from his state to show people that he's representing the people of Minnesota, and he understands that they're concerned for the planet. So Al Gore. In fact, we opened for Al Gore. We had a little girl with us, and
Aisha,
and he asked her a question, and they spoke, and it was nice to see him. That was just as he was the vice presidential candidate, just before he became the vice president.
Right, that's right.
Anyway, he spoke about keeping Earth in balance. In fact, we sang the songs, Dear Mr. President, please protect the forests, and the words in our song were directed to the president.
Tell us about the song you wrote called Keepers of the Forest.
Yes, Keepers of the Forest was written back when I was in L.A. and went to an event at the Bonaventure Hotel where Sting brought the chief of the Kaiapos named Chief Rayoni, and they were coming forth to ask America and ask the world to stop cutting down the rainforest. It was basically hard for him to protect his forest from where he was living, so he traveled the world to get help. And so I wrote this song, Keepers of the Forest, after I met him, and then eventually went down to Rio and met a lot of the keepers of the forest, the chiefs and the Kaiapo Indians there, and it was very sad to think that their homes are threatened by destruction for cattle grazing, for oil exploration, and once these Amazon forests are cut, it takes a long time for it to come back. It's really been a global issue that we need to help these Native Americans protect their lands.
Well, an estimated 50% of all endangered species live in the rainforest. And the planet's largest rainforest, the Amazon, lost more than 17% of its forest cover in the last century due to human activity.
Keepers of the forest, people of the world, gather with the forces, the battle flags unfurled. They say he's from the forest, his heart is filled with pain, and he cries for his children. Men in green, the skies began to call, Mama, to signal Earth's great need, great need.
Calling all the keepers, join the family now, with the light and the truth we'll take our sacred vow. Calling all the people, send the message now, if we let go of our greed,
we will have all that we need.
This is shocking. Dr. Michael Clapper used to say, you know, if we let them, they'll try to asphalt over the whole planet. And maybe what it's going to take is that we have to buy up the rainforest in order to keep it. And that's maybe what we have to do.
You know, there are organizations that's called Adopt an Acre. I did purchase a few acres of rainforest when I had a little bit of extra cash. And it's not that much. You can help these organizations. There's a lot of organizations that you can look into. World Wildlife Foundation, the National Wildlife Foundation, Sierra Club. Their websites are filled with information and things you can do. You can send emails to politicians, you can Facebook, you can make calls to your senators and your congressmen about local issues, about local forest protection, about everything from protecting the skies from chemtrails to stopping pipeline oil exploration, as just happened. The Keystone Pipeline was, although voted by Congress, it was vetoed by the president, and that's because there's a lot of people thinking that's not a good direction for us to go at this point, because it has an impact on the environment. It takes away from air quality, and it and it threatens our world. So you out there can do a lot. And these wonderful websites where these organizations put out information are great resources.
Have you hugged a tree today? I heard you went hiking today.
That's right. I think I hugged a few trees today. It was beautiful because it rained, and it was a very fresh feeling out in nature, and the trees just respond to rain. So, yes, have you hugged a tree today?
Oh, yes, I love trees. They are dear friends, and we have to love them. They give us so much.
Well, someone who hugged a lot of trees on his during his time on Earth was John Denver, and it was absolutely a blessing to meet him at Rio, and he invited us to WinStar Symposium, which was a great place for people to come together, and he always brought magnificent speakers, and there was just such a wonderful spirit there, wasn't there, Doug?
Absolutely. In the event, they had the president of the National Wildlife Federation named Jay Hare at the time, and he read a poem called Wild. And I went up to him after he read it, after the event, and asked if I could have a copy of the poem. He gave me the very copy he read from, and then later I went back and wrote a music to it.
For the earth will rise if we treasure it. If we treasure it, if we treasure it. Wild.
And so many people came to WinStar, and they were never the same after they left. I know that wonderful experience we had with the Youth at Risk group. How many were there of those teenagers?
Maybe 100 kids from inner cities were brought out to the WinStar Ranch to stay out under the stars, to sleep in teepees, actually, with Native Americans, and to sort of let go of their city ways and have an experience in nature. And I think they were affected.
Yeah, we all got to work with them. Some of them did art, some of them made instruments, and we got to do music with them, right, Dove?
Right, we got to, remember Chief Oren Lyons was
there? Oh, yes.
And he was in Rio as well, and he spoke about, you know, not to fear going out into the woods, you know, when there's bears. You speak to them, you speak to their spirit. He was giving us some of the native wisdom, and we taught them our song Earth Day Every Day, and that night, we were on stage with all those kids singing that song. As well, there was a whole tribe of Native Americans on stage, so that was a powerful night.
And everyone stood up. They all stood up.
They all stood up and clapped and felt the spirit of Rio waking up again. And then they all had a break, and John Denver came in and played a concert.
Magnificent.
Factors that threaten the Earth's creatures include deforestation, right? Water scarcity, erosion, pollution, fracking, pirate fishing, overfishing, oil and gas development, infrastructure, and illegal wildlife trade. Those are all factors contributing to our planet being... Threatened.
You think of what's threatening the planet, and it's human activities that are seeking energy resources. And some of these practices have been going on a long time, and overfishing with the oceans, you know, what it makes us want to do is stop and say, well, is there a better way? And that's where we're looking at solar energy, wind energy.
Well, I think it's great that you use your creativity through music and art to bring awareness to things like solar power. I know one of your songs is called Power of the Sun.
Yeah, let's hear a little of that. That's a celebration of solar panels and the possibility that our whole energy grid could be retooled to include the sun. I know countries like Germany have really led the way in almost
catch the wind from the flower. high above the tallest tower.
What about the solar highway? I've been thinking about, you know, here we have 25,000 miles of highway in our country, and the sun just beats on that highway, and asphalt is actually getting extremely expensive. It's gone from like $25 a ton to $1,000 a ton, so it's not even profitable. There's ways of making the highway into a solar receptors and panels and glass. Glass could be as hard as steel, and there's companies that are working on that. So imagine that our highways could generate enough energy for the whole country. That would be something.
Oh, yes.
I notice your car out the studio window, Dove. It's a white electric car. Is that an inconvenience for you not to be using fossil fuels?
Well, it seems to be working pretty well so far. About almost 20,000 miles of electric powered transportation, and it feels like a magic carpet sometimes. You just lightly tread across the roads. It doesn't go as far, you know. I have to charge it every night if I want to go 100 miles. So I'm pretty local with it. But if you're into that and you can work with it, it's a great thing to have. So, and the sun is also a spiritual centerpiece, something that unites us, that gives us light, warmth, and really we're dependent upon it. And so this song celebrates the sun.
So let us thank and be grateful to the beautiful sun that gives us so much in so many different forms, food and vegetables and animals, and sustains the planet.
Now, I know that Earth Day is coming up. Can you give us some ideas about how to utilize that date to raise awareness?
Sure. Earth Day is a very special holiday. It was started back in the 70s to celebrate. Back then, they had some problems with DDT and pesticides, and it was a big issue. And so Earth Day was a global sort of sit-in that people were expressing themselves. They didn't want pesticides in their foods, and they were the eggs of birds were cracking. So that was the issue back then. And so since then, it's blossomed into a yearly celebration of all of these issues. And in that day, you can go to a celebration of Earth Day or do something on your own, such as composting or work on your vegetable garden or recycle and set up your recycling system. There's a lot of things that Earth Day stands for.
To live, recycle with me, baby. I got so much to give. Recycle walking down the street. Let's eat off the beaches. Recycling at the stadium. It's what the teacher.
Simple.
It's beautiful. Thank you. You're an amazing talent. I wanted to address, talk about endangered species. The World Wildlife Organization focuses on saving certain species that help sustain other species. They protect wildlife such as pandas, whales, rhinos, marine turtles, primates, polar bears, and big cats. How important is it, Dove, to protect endangered species? Could you explain to us, please?
Sure. There's such a diversity of amazing wildlife on this planet, and it's taken years, thousands, millions of years to evolve into this tapestry of variety, and every one of these species is important. For example, there's the Amur leopard. There was only 35 or so left in Russian tundra areas, and in a few in Japan, But the effort's starting to turn this around, and just recently noticed there's about 70. So those numbers have gone up. They have cameras situated in this leopard reserve. And so when we make these efforts, we see a transformation. I was part of we mentioned Adam. Adam Rogers did Earth News Magazine, and I did a report on the California condor when there was only 7 condors in the wild. And I went out because I was a docent at Charmley Park, where I was learning native plants and animals. And the ranger and I went to visit this reserve where the 7 California condors existed. And we went and saw them all flying at the same time. And that was an amazing moment. And I went to the LA Zoo, where they have the program where they were reorienting them, taking care of them. They were hatching them, the eggs, with little puppets that looked like the mother, so that the chicks could bond to the mother. And then they grow up. And I saw one put into a carrying cage and put on a helicopter, and it flew off and it went, and now it's in the wild. So they were dying because of lead in gunshots, in bullets, and that the deer would get shot, and then the condor would feed on the deer, and they'd eat the lead, and they would die. And they went down from thousands, and for thousands of years, the condors flew across the whole country, and we were down to 7 in the wild. Now the numbers are up again. They're up to the hundreds, and they're in the Grand Canyon. And so it's an amazing time that people with enough attention and science and love can restore these endangered species, such as even the common things like the bees and the butterflies. The monarch butterflies are down 90% or less than what is usual because their habitats get cut, and the insecticides that go into food and into agriculture. So now there's a movement to go organic, to stop these big farms and huge use of pesticides, because the monarch butterfly can only land on and have its reproduce on one plant called the milkweed. So what even the National Wildlife Federation is teaming up with another organization to replant these milkweeds and go organic, so we don't have these pesticides, and hopefully they will return as well.
So before we move on to talk about the oceans, I'd like to just have you share a little bit of your condor song, and I'm going to visualize hundreds and hundreds of condors flying up in the sky.
Are scavengers. They help clean up what's left over. Each animal, each species has a role to play in the dance of life. There's many wonderful people in this movement, starting with John Muir, who was a statesman and an explorer and a scientist, and he stood up for the national parks and brought Teddy Roosevelt to Yellowstone and Yosemite, and that began preservation of wildlands in America. And the Sierra Club was founded by him, and I went to his home in Martinez, California, where he had an orchard. And so although he was a man of the, you know, the wilderness, he also made the wilderness where he was. And everyone can do that somehow. It's just wherever you are, wherever nature is where you are. And wherever you are, you can bring nature.
One of the things that I like to do is go out on the ocean and communicate with dolphins. And the Sea Explorer has these day trips.
Yeah, out in, if you're by the ocean, there's different institutes that can take you out on excursions. And I was fortunate to be part of this from the Ocean Institute near Dana Point, where we went out and saw dolphins and whales, and I actually was asked to play my electric violin for the dolphins and for the whales. And sure enough, when I would play, they would come out and they seemed like they could hear with my amplifier pointing to them, and
they responded, definitely, because they weren't close to the boat. And then when you played, all of a sudden they came right up close to the boat and were dancing right along.
Yeah, there's an energy, a palpable feeling when your boat is surrounded by a pod of dolphins, and it's very exciting. And it's just the energy kind of is transferred back and forth. It's a telepathic feeling, and we all have that ability to connect to the universal mind. And when we do it in the ocean, it's just a fantastic experience. And then another time with the blue whale was out there, and I was trying to reach it too with my low notes on the electric violin. And I wrote a song called Waltz of the Whales. I also wrote a song called Seahorse Waltz to celebrate our little tiny seahorses, which are in trouble too. And the seahorses need very clean water to thrive, just as the corals do. Corals are having a trouble under the sea as well. Life, it's like a forest for all the fish. So it's a chain link there. Every creature is interdependent with another one.
Well, a lot of people don't know that the oceans occupy nearly 71% of our planet's surface. That's really a large amount.
It's 97% of all our planet's water is contained in the ocean.
And when you were speaking about the coral, I know that in Hawaii there is a bay where there's definitely been degradation of the coral there. And we, through the Earth Harmony Foundation, were trying to have a community effort to stop this.
That's right. There's a couple of factors that were contributing to that. One was the papaya orchards, which were just uphill, were using a lot of chemical fertilizers with nitrogen. And that, with the rainfall that happens there, it runs off into the bay, and that nitrogen is getting into the corals. And those corals are looking pretty gray and dead. And it's a very sad thing, because people go there to see the beautiful corals. And the fish need the corals to be alive. Also, there's houses there, and the tides rise up into their sewage systems. And so it takes education, it takes awareness, it takes new solutions, such as compost toilets, such as organic farming. Those kind of things will help Kapoho Bay.
And could we hear a little bit of your song, Kapoho Bay?
Sure.
Such a lovely sight, as if some fairy mermaid poured a magic potion and bloomed a world of purples, blues, and whites. Oh, Kapoho Bay. In the clean blue sea, how long will it stay this way?
Thank you, beautiful song, another one. Thank you. The pale blue dot, as Carl Sagan said it once about our planet. The Earth is a huge organism, isn't it? And yeah. Gaia, as it is also called, it is evolving and sustaining itself.
Amazing that our planet is sustaining us as well. You know, every creature has a role to play. An example of it is in South America, there are the anteaters, and they are giant. They go around, they need to eat a lot of termites to stay, you know, filled with food. So they find these mounds that are sometimes 8-10 feet tall, filled with termites, and they dig with their claws into it for a few minutes, 10 minutes, and they get through there, and then they find the termites, and they stick their tongue in it, and the sticky tongue picks up termites, and it starts eating, and it's all happy for about a minute or two until the warrior termites come up from underneath and start attacking that tongue and biting it, and that anteater has to leave, and it's goes on as it's had some food, but it goes to another mound and it does the same thing. It digs into it, and in this way the Earth protects itself. Otherwise the anteater would eat the whole mound and there'd be no more termites.
Dove, do you remember the anteaters at Iguazu Falls in South America? And there was like many of them. They're so cute. They came out, and then one of them stole my bag.
That's right.
And you remember that? They're like, wait a minute, that's my bag, give it to me. And it was pulling the bag and about to run away with it. They're cute little fellas, aren't they?
Yeah, those were the rainforest ones. There were no termites around, so they needed your bag.
Yeah. So, would you like to guide us through a short grounding meditation, Dove?
Yes. It's important to feel connected to our Earth, even if we're in the city or in a building. And so if we just stop and take a moment and take a deep breath and feel ourselves as a tree, maybe a great redwood tree, and reach down below deep with your roots into the Earth, and tiny roots digging farther into the soil to get minerals. Ground ourselves. That's one way we can feel connected. And now we're connected to the Earth, and we just have to let it happen. We don't need to do anything when we're a tree. We need to just be and take a deep breath and allow anything that's not of our energy to just go through that cord deep into the Earth and give it to the Earth to transform. And now take a deep breath and fill your being with white light. Now you've released what's not part of you and you've filled yourself up with love. And try to feel what it's like to be connected to the Earth.
I know that you have had an experience recently with the Stargate portal, and I'm wondering if you could share with us how you wrote the song Dream with the Earth.
Yeah, that's what I was contemplating on. What is the Earth saying to us? What is, if it's, she's alive, she's an organism, she's Gaia, how do we connect with her? And I think our dreams are a secret, and we need to create a Earth gate, like a Stargate, to allow those messages to come forth. And where are we needed? Where are we needed to not only bring balance for the Earth, but for ourselves? Maybe that's the deepest part of ourselves, is when we're fully connected to the planet. So that's what the song Dream with the Earth was written to question those questions.
Searching then has drives the earth in this dream.
Thank you, Asa.
Now that we have connected like trees making a forest, let us think about the forests. Aren't the forests a bit like the lungs of the planet?
Truly, you know, you think of your own lungs, and that's where you're breathing, where you create oxygen for your body, and that's what the trees do for the planet. So there's a very mysterious connection between trees and ourselves. I mean, we really need those trees to give us our air, and we in turn breathe out carbon dioxide, which they recycle. So it's a symbiotic relationship with trees. It's kind of a mystery, isn't it?
It is. It's a mystery. Didn't you write a song called Mystery of the Trees?
Yeah, let's hear a little bit of Mystery of the Trees.
Life within us. Trees, I think they have one unit of life within them, and their consciousness is very simple, and that is to reach out to the sun. It's a very beautiful information from all ancient knowledge.
Right, how inspiring to be focused like that, to reach, to go against gravity, to defy gravity and go upwards, tall as possible. That's a beautiful willpower of the tree.
I've also heard that trees are, they were sages in other lifetimes that did not want to share the knowledge. Now they are stationary and they just give and serve.
Just give and let things be. They're very, very good teachers for us to be who we are.
And some of my favorite memories of being a little child in New Zealand was to climb up in a big, huge tree and just put my back up against the trunk, let my arms flop down and just feel the sun on my face. Those are some of my happiest memories from childhood.
And trees serve a purpose now of actually storing carbon. As they take in the carbon and they turn it into solid from the air, they have transformed the planet from an uninhabitable place with poisonous air into an oxygen-filled environment suitable for humans and animals to live in. So what they've done, we don't want to reverse through the use of fossil fuels and because when we use that, we burn it back into the air, then that all that carbon that they've been taking out of the air has been put back in the air. So there's in the tundra in the Siberia is methane, and that's frozen, that's hidden. But if the temperatures rise too much in that tundra and the Arctic and starts to melt, then that's a bigger problem than even from the carbon dioxide. So we do need our trees to keep our environment going.
Siberia, this is the place of my birth. I love the area. Have you heard? As a matter of fact, when you are not feeling so great, and you want to go and tell a tree just give it a hug and tell the tree what it is that is bothering you or you're concerned with, worried about, and it will listen. Isn't it so?
That's right. I heard Jean Houston has a meditation exactly of that, where you talk to the tree and you listen. You listen to back what the tree has to say. And look at it. There's a message of how it's figured out how to stay in balance with its branches and how to reach for the sun.
So, Dove, I know that your parents would be so proud of you. They're watching down and smiling from heaven now. But I was there when your parents came to the debut of that magnificent Symphony of the Sacred Forest. And I remember we were giving you flowers up on stage. And I'm wondering if you could share a little about how you came to write that. I mean, it almost seems to me that you were feeling a little bit like a cross between John Muir and Beethoven when you wrote that symphony.
Beethoven went out into the woods and would be in stillness and quiet, and while he was still able to hear, he would listen to the forests and he would come up with melodies out in the woods. So I tried to do that.
So I hope that you've enjoyed listening to the conversation today, and maybe you'll be inspired to join a group near you that goes out into nature. I know the Prepare for Change West LA group, last year we used to meet at a lake, and we would hike around the lake, and there were magnificent trees there, and we always felt so inspired just being there. So I'd like to recommend everybody does a little bit of that. I did that this morning, went for a hike. I sat and meditated on this big stone and felt the sun on my face and watched the steam coming up off the grass because it had rained just recently. And it was so healing.
I remember those times we were in that beautiful area with so many beautiful energy vortexes there. I want to say to everyone, listen to the voice of truth within you. Be fearless. Seek only to know yourselves and live in harmony with the ways of our planet Earth. May you be blessed by the supreme love and truth of the cosmos.
And
yes, thank you for allowing me to join you in this conversation as we share our feelings and our insights about our nature that we live in, and may everybody have a blessed day.
Thank you, Dove. We so appreciated having you here in the studio, and we look forward to having you back again in the future. And let's close out with your beautiful global anthem, Voices of the World. Namaste.
Thank you. Blessings.
Bye.
We can join